So today I'm going to be discussing Homer's depiction of Achilles in the Iliad. So I'd actually like to thank Aaron for setting this up. I'll basically be building on what he said. More specifically, I'm going to be looking at how his contemporaries would have perceived how he portrayed him, would have interpreted this portrayal. Now, the story of Achilles is one that continues to be well-known today. Besides the fact that his heel has become synonymous with anything's greatest weakness, you only have to walk down to the nearest Blockbuster and pick up a copy of Troy, and you can have the story told to you. Now, I'll refrain from recommending this movie to anybody. I mean, if you even slightly admire or respect Homer or classics, you would leave it on the shelf. But I would recommend looking at its cover, because if you look at the cover, you'll learn everything of value that I believe this movie has to teach you. Because on this cover, you'll see that we portray the great Achilles by the great Brad Pitt. Now, to me, this begs the question of how would the Greeks have perceived Achilles? Would they have agreed with how we've portrayed him? Or would they have equated their Achilles with our Brad Pitt? And if not, how would they have described him? Now, to me, this, if we can manage to evaluate Achilles effectively, that'll provide a great amount of insight into how the Greeks perceived their heroes, what kind of characteristics they valued, and if it was simply by someone's deeds that they honored them, or if it was also based on their character. So to do this, well, as you'll see, I've come to the conclusion they would have perceived Homer or Achilles as a psychopath. To do this, I have applied the most modern concept, the most widely accepted method of evaluating psychopaths in our society. The trick is that they never had the concept of a psychopath. So I will be using our criteria, but I'll be doing my best to look through the Greeks' eyes, and I'm giving Greek reasoning for my evaluations. So the most common method is Hare's Psychopathy Checklist Revised. It's also called the PCLR. Before I put it up, I just want to reassure that everybody is expected to have at least one or two of these qualities. If you do, it doesn't mean you are a psychopath. So on this list, there are 20 criteria. How do I do this?
Push the forward button.
There we go. So, first time, sorry. On this checklist, there are 20 criteria, as you can see. I know it's very muddled. I'll highlight them as I go through them for you. I'll clarify a little bit. The process of evaluating a suspected psychopath would be to conduct an interview with them. For each one of these criteria, they'd be given a grade of 0, 1, or 2, depending on whether it's applicable or not. Out of a possible 40 points, if they get over 30, they would be considered a psychopath. Now, I believe that not all of these criteria will be able to be applied because of the different values in society. For instance, promiscuous sexual behavior. Oh, there's a few of them there. But within promiscuous sexual behavior, the Greeks didn't perceive the same way as us. For us, adultery would have been considered a crime. To the Greeks, it wasn't necessarily so bad. Odysseus, for example, has several sexual relations on his way back to seeing Penelope. Now, granted, one of these is a witch, one's a goddess, and one a goddess persuaded him, so to speak. But he's not necessarily looked down upon because of this. So in that sense, I believe we had to take it off the list. I also took off the bottom two here because I'm only using the Iliad as my source of evaluation. In this sense, I don't feel we have a substantial amount of information to be able to evaluate his youth. We may have some background on him, but I don't believe it's enough to make an assessment. The parasitic lifestyle, yes, he is a prince, a king. I believe that you can make an argument that he is, or he would be guilty of this, but again, I don't believe we have the information. So on to my evaluation. In book one, Agamemnon seizes Achilles' prized woman, Chryses. This is because he lost Chryses, and so he'll take Achilles from her. This is a huge insult to the Greeks, for if you didn't have a prize, if you couldn't prove that you had accomplished a deed, it was as good as though it never even happened. So, after Agamemnon takes Chryses from him, Achilles reaches for his sword and is intending to draw it on Agamemnon. Now, Achilles is the greatest warrior. He would have defeated them. But they're at this moment, they're at a council with all the kings debating on what should be done because Apollo has unleashed a plague onto the Greek camp. The fact that Achilles reaches for his sword is a huge sign of his impulsivity. So this is a note. It was on my laptop. But he has to be restrained by Athena. He doesn't act on his own accord. After following this, he then refuses to fight because of the insult that was granted to him. He is a warrior. His job is to go conduct war, is to go kill. He is not doing his duty. He's not doing his job to Greek society. This will demonstrate that he is quite irresponsible. Following this, he then prays to his mother, Thetis, to go beg Zeus to have the Greeks push back to the ships so long as he is not battling. The very fact that he's praying to Zeus for this, or praying to his mother to go ask Zeus, demonstrates his lack of empathy. He doesn't care so much about the lives of his fellow Greeks. He's also trying to manipulate the outcome of the war. He doesn't, well, not necessarily the outcome, but he's trying to manipulate the manner in which the war is conducted. In book 16, we see that Patroclus, Patroclus, Achilles' most beloved cousin, comes pleading to Achilles to take up his arms and go fight, push back the Trojans, for at this moment the Trojans have pushed the Greeks back to their ships. Achilles refuses to actually go out on the field himself, but he does allow Patroclus to take up his own arms and go fight. His reasoning for this is that the mere appearance of Achilles rejoining the battle would be enough to turn the tide. Now, Seth Bernadette has interpreted this as he's attempting to win glory while refusing to submit to Agamemnon. But the simple fact that he's refusing to fight despite knowing that he could turn the tides demonstrates a tremendous amount of lack of guilt. He doesn't feel guilty despite he knows it's his fault that the Greeks are being pushed back and he could change it. He could. So Patroclus takes up his arms and goes out and fights. Patroclus fights Hector and he dies. Hector is the second greatest warrior at this time, debatably Ajax, but now, after this, when Achilles gets wind, a huge amount of wrath takes over him, and this is a major common theme for Achilles. But despite being the one who sent Patroclus out, he refuses to take the blame and insists that it was Patroclus died because he disobeyed his orders. He claims that he said not to bring the battle to the Trojan walls, but then he changed it to saying that, he told Patroclus not to take the battle to the Trojan walls, but later he claims that he told him not to battle Hector. This simple rearrangement of words is a clear demonstration that he is failing to take responsibility for his own actions. I think that is quite undeniable. In book 9, if we go back a little bit, Phoenix, Ajax, and Odysseus are going on an embassy to Achilles, and here they're trying to persuade Achilles to fight. This is because Agamemnon concedes and agrees to make amends with Achilles. He offers him his daughter, and along with that, money, power, land, all the glories one could ask for. He is undoing the whole insult he did. He promised Briseis had been untouched. And then he's going to add more to this. Now, Achilles refuses. And as Phoenix says, his seething anger was not uncommon to the heroes that came before Achilles. But the fact that he refuses to relent in his anger is. This is a great time in the fact that despite his king offering to make amends, he refuses his king. Agamemnon is the king of kings. So this would be the first crime that Achilles has committed. An even greater crime that Achilles commits, though, is that unlike in book 1, Achilles now knows for a fact that his participation in the war determines the success of the Greeks. By refusing to battle, he is deliberately dictating the course of events for the war. He is trying to come up with the outcome. This is a privilege reserved for the gods. By refusing to battle, he has thus elevated himself to the status of a god, at least in his own mind. And this would be among the greatest crimes that any Greek could commit. At the same time, he is demonstrating a huge grandiose sense of self-worth. Now, finally, I think I can say that there are three other criteria I believe he would be guilty of, although I didn't want to go through every single one. I thought I might get a little redundant for you. But I believe he has control, as is quite obvious throughout the book. He has a need for stimulation. He thoroughly enjoys killing people. Partly for the Greeks, it is the fact that this demonstrates his superiority. This is his task, but in addition to this, he purely enjoys it, reasserting his dominance. And now, while he may have realistic goals, as Aaron probably pointed out, they're not very long term. He knows that he will die at the end of the war. I made a new copy of it. Can't really work. All this evidence has convinced me that the Greeks would have perceived him as a psychopath. This does not mean he was not a hero, though. They did acknowledge and appreciate the deeds that he had done. For further proof of this, as again Aaron has mentioned, you can turn to the Odyssey. Now, while I said that I'm restricting myself to the Iliad here, the Odyssey is also written by Homer, so we're remaining within the same author. It's a little bit of a cheat. But in Book 11, verses 5-7 and 5-59, we see that Achilles is the king of the dead, but as he claims, he would rather be a living slave than a dead ruler or king of the dead. This demonstrates how he is placed above the other mortals. He is given a privileged role in the underworld, but they have not raised him to Mount Olympus. They have not revered him as a god or an immortal. He is not pleased with the position he has. So they do acknowledge what he has done, but their opinion of his character has hindered his ability to elevate himself to the status that he always so long sought. So that is my conclusion. I don't know if you'll all agree with me, but if you don't, I would be happy to take some questions for it. So, thank you.
So, I don't have a job anymore since I asked for questions.
Sorry.
Questions.